If you have a social media account on Facebook or Twitter, say, you may have blocked or unfriended someone, maybe for personal reasons, maybe for a disagreement over politics. It's just part of the social media world for everyday users.
But what if you're not an everyday user? You're an elected public official and you use your social media platform to talk policy and politics. Can you block whoever you want to from accessing your posts?
That question is at the center of a lawsuit filed against President Trump and two of his staff. The president is a big Twitter user, and on his personal account, Real Donald Trump, he's blocked a number of people who have challenged his policies and behavior. A group of those blocked users have filed a lawsuit represented by the Knight First Amendment Institute at Columbia University. They say their First Amendment rights have been violated.
Our next guest says this case could have implications for other levels of government and social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and maybe ones that don't even exist yet. Morgan Weiland joins us now. She's a First Amendment and media lawyer and scholar at Stanford University. Morgan, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, for starters, Morgan, what's the argument from these blocked Twitter users in this lawsuit against the president?
Well, as you rightly pointed out in your intro, these Twitter users who have been blocked, who are from a variety of different states across the country and who are being represented by the Knight Institute at Columbia University, are arguing that their First Amendment rights are being violated because they're not able to engage with the president on Twitter. And that argument turns on a key legal question, which is whether or not Donald Trump's Twitter account amounts to a public forum. What's a public forum? Essentially, every town square that we've ever enjoyed, we've ever walked through, even sidewalks, those are public forums. They're government property that are open to the public where anyone can speak and say whatever they'd like without any sort of discrimination based on their viewpoint. Now, the argument that the Twitter users, the block users, and the Knight Institute are advancing in this particular case is that Donald Trump's personal Twitter account is, in fact, also a public forum. And that's the key legal question that the Southern District of New York will have to deal with.
And what's been the basic response from the White House on this?
My understanding is that they haven't responded to this question. I know that the Knight Institute sent a letter before they filed this lawsuit, and there was no response. According to Columbia University, there was no response from the White House about this particular issue. But I think what's particularly interesting, and there is a good counter-argument even if the White House hasn't yet made it, I think an interesting counter-argument against the lawsuit is that Donald Trump's actually using his personal Twitter account. There are multiple Twitter accounts that he has access to. One of them is the one that was handed down from Barack Obama, which is the official White House Twitter account. The one that is at issue is, as you pointed out, his personal Twitter account. And so the counter-argument would be that he's speaking in his capacity as a private citizen, that he has the right to offer his opinions about whatever he'd like as a private citizen, and that there is no First Amendment interest that's implicated because he's not acting as a government official. Now, I think, you know, personally, I think that argument is vulnerable because, as we've seen, President Trump has used the @RealDonaldTrump account, even though it was created initially in his capacity as a private citizen. He's used it to talk about and advance policies and practices of the presidency. So I think that will be their best argument, but I do think that the blocked Twitter users have a good claim to make.
If I were a public official and I just used, say, my Twitter feed or Facebook page for that matter, just to show, you know, pictures of puppies and kittens and the meals I eat and that sort of thing, would I be in a different argument in blocking someone than if I used it to lay out my policy proposals?
I think that's absolutely right. And the reason is that the public forum doctrine and the whole point of the First Amendment that's implicated here is to ensure that spaces where public discourse about political questions that are happening between politicians, public officials, and citizens and voters is open, and that individuals are not being discriminated against just because they disagree with what a politician has to say. And that's really a key problem in this case. President Trump has been blocking people who disagree with him. And as the public forum doctrine makes really clear, the whole point of ensuring that these sorts of spaces, whether they're virtual spaces like a Twitter account or they're real-world spaces like a like a sidewalk, the whole point of ensuring that these spaces are open is to ensure that there's active and robust dialogue between public officials and citizens, and that that dialogue does not involve discrimination based on a citizen's viewpoint. So if I'm a Democrat and I disagree with Donald Trump and I say so, I shouldn't be discriminated against just because I hold a different view.
Are we in kind of uncharted legal territory here with all this politics, First Amendment stuff on a social media forum? Or is this a pretty easy analogy to make with the last 200 years of American government?
It's a really important question. I think, you know, I'm here at Stanford in the heart of Silicon Valley, and I think we get very excited about new types of technologies, and in many instances, new technologies do are game-changing in terms of the law. But I think in this particular case, there's an important through line in terms of democratic principles, which is we need to make sure as a country that we hold forums that government officials use open in a non-discriminatory way to citizens. And that applies regardless of whether the space is virtual or not. So I think that we should not get distracted by the shiny new object that can be, new technologies. I sometimes it matters, but I think that it's much less important in this particular case.
Talking to Morgan Weiland from Stanford University. She's a scholar on the First Amendment and media, looking at a lawsuit against President Trump and a couple of his advisors over blocking people from the real Donald Trump Twitter account if they disagree with his views. This may have implications beyond this particular case. And let's talk about those implications, Morgan. I mean, this is obviously a high-profile issue with the president and his Twitter. Where else could this becoming an issue? Where else could this case affect the way public officials behave online?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this case will have sweeping implications regardless of the outcome. As I'm sure many of your listeners know, and they probably all have, Facebook accounts. And Facebook is a place that is increasingly becoming a hub for politicians, just like Twitter is. And Facebook has been rolling out what they call election pages or candidate pages. And I can imagine in the 2018 or 2020 elections that are coming up, candidates having pages that are, you know, an integral part of their voter outreach effort and an integral part of the way that they're conducting their campaigns. And imagine it's just a half step away from what's happening in the Twitter case that we've been discussing. Imagine if the neighbor to your left, Minnesota. Imagine if Senator Al Franken has a Facebook page and he decides, well, you know, I don't really want any voters who are Republicans to be able to be part of my Facebook page. And so they identify everyone on the voter rolls who's a Republican and then block them or exclude them or unfriend them on Facebook. That would be outrageous. And I think that's something that would be very much in line with what we've seen Trump doing, blocking people who disagree with them. And that's the sort of outcome that I think we should be hoping as American citizens to avoid, because that would fundamentally undermine our ability to interact with our elected officials and also potential candidates who we may want to vote for. So I think that the legal issues at stake here could absolutely have implications for a Facebook kind of application going forward, because I think the Facebook example is even more clear. If a politician has a page and says that this is their candidate page or their official page, there should be no question, I think, that's a public forum, that's an official statement that the politician is making.
No, wait, suppose I'm in Congress, I'm Congressman Rob, I've got a Facebook forum for my work as a congressperson. And then over here, I've got a Facebook forum for candidate Rob 2018. Do those get treated differently? Is it easier for me to bar people from my candidate page than my public official page?
I think they should be treated the same way, because the principle of ensuring openness and communication with potential voters should be the same, I think. Now, if you have the interesting hypo, the legal nerd in me is thinking, well, what about the third page that is your Rob the dad and father and husband page? Maybe that page would be private. I think what really matters, and this ties us back to the Trump Twitter lawsuit, the question is how does Rob the candidate, how does Rob use that page? If he has a private page that he effectively uses to talk about politics, well, then let's look at how he's actually using it. Now, if he's just posting pictures of puppies and grandkids, then maybe that actually is a legitimately private space, and he deserves some privacy interest in that space.
I keep on thinking of other possibilities. Suppose the Democratic Party or the Republican Party said, hey, we have this page for Democrats or Republicans, and hey, as a bonus for joining in, you get to interact with some of your favorite Democratic or Republican officials. Does the presence of those officials on that page mean, hey, we can't make this a closed room for Republicans or Democrats?
Interesting question. Honestly, I'm not positive exactly what the legal answer to that question would be. Now, if the page was being held out as something that was open, if they weren't a candidate and they were an official and they were holding out this page as a space where this candidate or this official was engaging in a very open discussion about their policies, about a piece of legislation, and they were soliciting feedback, then excluding people based on their party affiliation would definitely be a problem because, again, that cuts to the purpose of having an open, non-discriminatory public forum, which is allowing citizens to both speak and hear and engage in this back and forth so that they can participate fully as citizens. So I do think that it would be a potential violation. But again, if we see candidates, if we see politicians pushing boundaries in this way, I can imagine that we'll see more lawsuits trying to sort of define exactly what the boundaries of the public forum doctrine are online.
I'll stop my thread of off the top of my head hypotheticals now and ask, this is going to the courts, this lawsuit. Is this something where maybe we need legislation to lay things out in a more clear way, or is that just creating more problems?
Well, given the current climate, I'm never very hopeful that legislation will be passed, to be honest. But I think the First Amendment doctrine is robust and addresses the question that Columbia University and the blocked Twitter followers are raising. So I think our courts are perfectly capable of handling this question, and the precedent exists to answer the question that's being raised.
And briefly, as we see more people on social media, new kinds of social media, more political use of it, are we going to see more cases like this one, do you think?
It's hard to speculate, but I think that as we get a better sense of the virtual world being just an extension of and imbricated with the real world, we will come to understand that the laws in many respects apply as they would if we were talking about a sidewalk or a town square or a town hall that was being opened to citizens to engage with their public officials. So I think maybe finally the law might be catching up with the online reality that we've been living, and hopefully we won't see a total proliferation of these types of lawsuits.
It's a good place to leave it. Morgan, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Morgan Weiland, First Amendment and media lawyer and scholar at Stanford University, talking about a First Amendment lawsuit against President Trump for blocking Twitter followers.